There was an old military saying that Fred Cullen used to describe total bewilderment and confusion. An individual in that state, according to Fred, couldn't tell if it was arsehole or breakfast time. This had always puzzled Vimes. He wondered what research had been done. Even now, with his mouth tasting of warmed over yesterday and everything curiously sharp in his vision, he thought he'd be able to tell the difference. Only one was likely to include a cup of coffee for a start. He had one now, ergo, it was breakfast time. Actually, it was near lunchtime, but that would have to do. The troll, known to everyone else and occasionally to himself as Brick, was seated in one of the big troll cells. But in deference to the fact that no one could decide if he was a prisoner or not, the door had been left unlocked. The understanding was that, provided he didn't try to leave, no one would stop him leaving. Brick was engulfing his third bowl of mineral-rich mud that, to a troll, was nourishing soup. "What is Scrape?" Vimes said, leaning back in the room's one spare chair and staring at Brick as a zoologist might eye in a fascinating but highly unpredictable new species. He put the stone book from the mysterious Mr. Shine on the table by the bowl to see if it got any reaction, but the troll paid it no attention. "Scrape. You don't see it much these days, now that slab's so damn cheap," rumbled Detritus, who was watching his new find with a proprietorial air, like a mother hen watching a chick who was about to leave the nest. It what you scrape up, see? A few bits of drain-grade slab, boiled up in a tin with alcohol and pigeon droppings. It what der street trolls make when day is short of cash, and what is it day's short of, Brick? The moving spoon paused. "Day short of self-respect, Sergeant," he said, as one might who'd had the lesson shouted into his ear for 20 minutes. "By Io, he got it," said Detritus, slapping the skinny Brick on the back so hard that the young troll dropped his spoon into the steaming gloop. "But this lad has promised me all that is behind him, and he is damn straight now, on account of having joined my one-step program. Ain't that so, Brick? No more slab, scrape, slice, slide, slunky, slurp, or sliver for dis boy, right?" "Yes, Sergeant," said Brick obediently. "Sergeant, why do the names of all the troll jugs start with S?" said Vimes. "Ah, it makes them easier to remember, sir," said Detritus, nodding sagely. "Ah, of course. I hadn't spotted that," said Vimes. "Has Sergeant Detritus explained to you why he calls it a one-step program, Brick?" "'Cause he won't let me put a foot wrong, sir," said Brick, as if reading off a card. "Ah, and Brick here's got something else to say to you, haven't you, Brick?" said the maternal Detritus. "Go on, tell Mr. Vimes." Brick looked down at the table. "Sorry I tried to kill you, Mr. Vimes," he whispered. "Well, we'll see about that, shall we?" said Vimes, for something better to say. "By the way, I think you meant Mr. Vimes, and I prefer it if only people who fought alongside me call me Mr. Vimes." "Well, technically, Brick has fought," Detritus began, but Vimes put down his coffee mug firmly. His ribs were aching. "No, in front of is not the same as alongside, Sergeant," he said. "It really isn't. Not really his fault, sir. It was more a case of a mistaken identity," Detritus protested. "You mean he didn't know who I was?" said Vimes. That didn't seem to... "No, sir. He didn't know who he was, sir. He thought he was a bunch of lights and fireworks. Trust me, sir. I reckon I can make something of this one. Please? Sir, he was out of his brain on Big Hammer, and still he was walking about." Vimes stared at Detritus a moment, and then looked back at Brick. "Mr. Brick, tell me how you got into the mine, will you?" he said. "I told the other policeman," Brick began. "Now you tell Mr. Vimes," growled Detritus, "right now." It took a little while, with pauses for bits of Brick's mind to shunt into position, but Vimes assembled it like this. The wretched brick had been cooking up scrape with some fellow gutter trolls in an old warehouse in the maze of streets behind Park Lane. Had blundered down into the cellar looking for a cool place to watch the display. And the floor had given way under him. By the sound of it, he'd fallen a long way, but to judge by the troll's natural state, he probably floated down like a butterfly. He'd ended up in a tunnel, like a mine, you know, with all a wood holding the roof up, and had wandered along in the hope that it led back to the surface or something to eat. He didn't start to worry until he came out into a far grander tunnel, and the words dwarfs finally reached a bit of his brain with nothing to do but listen. A troll in a dwarf mine goes on the rampage. It was one of those givens, like a bull in a china shop. But Brick seemed refreshingly free of hatred toward anyone, providing the world supplied enough things to, beginning with S, to make his head go bzzz, and the city had no shortage of these. He didn't much care about what else it did. Brick, down in the gutter, had even dropped up below that horizon. No wonder Chrysoprase's shakedown hadn't corralled him. Brick was something you stepped over. It might even have occurred to Brick, standing there in the dark, with the sound of dwarf voices in the distance, to be afraid. And then he'd seen, through a big round doorway, one dwarf holding up another and hit it over the head. It was cave gloomy, but trolls had good night vision. And there were always the verms. The troll hadn't made out details and was not particularly interested in seeing any. Who cared what dwarfs did to one another, so long as they didn't do it to him? He didn't see a problem. But when the dwarf that had done the bashing started to shout, then there was a problem, large as life. A big metal door right by him had slammed open and hit him in the face. When he peered out from behind it, it was to see several armed dwarfs running past. They weren't interested in what might be behind the door, not yet. They were doing what people do, which is run toward the source of the shouting. Brick, on the other hand, was only interested in getting as far away from the shouting as possible, and right here was an open door. He took it and ran, not stopping until he was out in the fresh night air. There had been no pursuit. Vimes wasn't surprised. You needed a special kind of mind to be a guard. It was one that prepared to be in a body that stood and looked at nothing very much for hours on end. Such a mind did not command high wages. Such a mind, too, would not be likely to start a search by looking in the tunnel. It just arrived by. It would not be the sharpest knife in the drawer. And so, aimlessly without intent, malice, or even curiosity, a wandering troll had wandered into a dwarf mine, spotted a murderer through a drug-addled perception, and wandered out again. Who could plan for anything like that? Where was the logic? Where was the sense? Vimes looked at the watery, fried egg eyes, the emaciated frame, the thin dribble of God's knew what from a crusted nostril. Brick wasn't telling lies. Brick had enough trouble dealing with things that weren't made up. Tell Mr. Vimes about the big wook, Detritus prompted. Oh yeah, said Brick. There was this big wook in der cave. I think I'm missing a vital point here, said Vimes. A wookwuck is what you make with charcoal and niter and slab, said the sergeant. You roll up in paper like a cigar, you know? We called them wookwucks because they look like, you know, a wookwuck, said Brick with an embarrassed grin. Yes, I'm getting the picture, said Vimes. Wearily. And did you try to smoke it? No, sir. It was big, said Brick, all rolled up in their cave, just by the Mankiel tunnel I fell into. Vimes tried to fit this into his thinking and left it out for now, so a dwarf did it, right? And right now he believed Brick, although a bucket of frogs would make a better witness. No sense in pushing him further right now, anyway. Okay, he said. He reached down and came up with the mysterious stone that had been left on the floor of the office. It was about 8 inches across, but curiously light. Tell me about Mr. Scheinbeck. Friend of yours? Mr. Schein is everywhere, said Brick fervently. Him Diamond. Well, half an hour ago he was in this building, said Vimes. Detritus? Sir? Said the sergeant, a guilty look spreading across his face. What do you know about Mr. Schein? Said Vimes, sir. He's a bit like a troll god, Detritus muttered. Don't get many gods in here, as a rule, said Vimes. Someone's pinched the secret of fire. Have you seen my golden apple? It's amazing how often we don't get that sort of question in the crime book. He's a troll, is he? Kind of like a king, said Detritus, as if every word was being dragged from him. I thought trolls shouldn't have kings these days, said Vimes. I thought every clan ruled itself. Right, right, said Detritus. Look, Mr. Vimes, he Mr. Schein, okay? We don't talk about him much. The troll's expression was a mixture of misery and defiance. Vimes decided to go for a weaker target. Where did you find him, Brick? I just want to... He came calling to help you. Snarled Detritus. What are you doing, Mr. Vimes? Why you go on asking questions? With the dwarfs, you have pussy feet. Must not upset him. Oh, no. But what you do if they was trolls, eh? Kick down their door, no problem. Mr. Schein bring you Brick. Give you good advice. And you talk like he being a bad troll. I'm hearing now where Captain Carrot, he telling the dwarfs see the two brothers. You think that makes me happy? We know dat lying old dwarf lie. Yes. We groan at it, lying. Yes. You want to see Mr. Schein. You show humble. You show respect, yes? This is Coombe Valley again, thought Vimes. He'd never seen Detritus this angry, at least at him. The troll was just there, reliable and dependable. At Coombe Valley, two tribes had met and no one blinked. I apologize, he said, blinking. I didn't know. No offense was meant. Right, said Detritus, his huge hand thumping on the table. The spoon jumped out of Brooke's empty soup bowl. The mysterious rock ball rolled across the table, with an inevitable little trundling noise, and cracked open on the floor. Vimes looked down at two neat halves. It's full of crystals, he said. Then he looked closer. There was a piece of paper in one broken, glittering hemisphere. He picked it up and read, Pointer and Pickles, crystals, minerals, and tumbling supplies. Number 3, 10th Egg Street, Ankhmore Pork. Vimes put this down carefully and picked up the two pieces of the stone. He pushed them together, and they fitted with the merest hairline crack. There was no sign that any glue had ever been used. He looked up at Detritus. Did you know that was going to happen? He said. No, said the troll. But I think Mr. Schein did. He's given me his address, Sergeant. Yeah. So maybe he want you to visit, Detritus conceded. That is an honor. All right. You don't find Mr. Schein. Mr. Schein find you. How did he find you, Mr. Brick? Said Vimes. Brick gave Detritus a panicky look. The sergeant shrugged. He picked me up one day. Give me food, Brick mumbled. He showed me where to come for more. He told me to keep off of the stuff, too. But, yes, Vimes prompted. Brick waved a pair of scarred, knobbly arms in a gesture that said far more coherently than he could. There was the whole universe on one side and Brick on the other. And what could anyone do against odds like that? And so, he'd been handed over to Detritus, Vimes thought. That evened the odds somewhat. He stood up and nodded to Detritus. Should I take anything, Sergeant? The troll thought about this. No, he said. But maybe there's some thinking you could leave behind. I should be in charge of the mine raid, thought Vimes. We might be starting a war, after all, so I'm sure people would like to think that someone high up was there when it happened. So, why do you think it's more important that I see the mysterious Mr. Schein? Captain Carrot had been busy. The city dwarfs liked him, so he'd done what Vimes could not have done, or at least have done well, which was to take a muddy dwarf necklace to a dwarf home down in New Cobblers and explain to the two dwarf parents how it had been found. Things had happened quite fast after that, and the other reason for the speed was that the mine was shut. Guards and workers and dwarfs seeking guidance on the path of dwarfdom had turned up to be met with locked doors. Money was owing, and dwarfs got very definite about things like that. A lot of the huge body of dwarf lore was about contracts. You were supposed to get paid. No more politics, Vimes told himself. Someone killed four of our dwarfs, not some crazy rabble-rouser, and left them down there in the dark. I don't care who they are. They're going to be dragged into the light. It's the law. All the way to the bottom, all the way to the top. But it's going to be done by dwarfs. Dwarfs will go to that well and dig out that mud again and bring up the proof. He walked into the main office. Carrot was there, along with a half a dozen dwarf officers. They looked grim. All set, said Vimes. Yes, sir. We'll meet the others at Empirical Crescent. You've got enough diggers? All dwarfs are diggers, sir, said Carrot solemnly. There's timber on the way, and winching gear, too. Some of the miners joining us helped dig that tunnel, sir. They knew those lads. They're a bit bewildered and angry. I'll bet they believe us, do they? Said Vimes. More or less, sir. If the bodies aren't there, though, we're going to have some explaining to do. Very true. Didn't your lads know what they were digging for? No, sir. They just got orders from the Dark Dwarfs, and different squads dug in different directions. A long way in different directions, as far as Money Trap Lane and Edercap Street, they think. That's a big slice of the city. Yes, sir. But there was something odd. Do go on, Captain, said Vimes. We're good at odd. Every so often, everyone had to stop work, and the foreign dwarfs listened at the walls with a bigger thing, like an ear trumpet. Sally found something like that when she was down there. They were listening, in soggy mud. Listening for what? Singing worms? The dwarfs don't know, sir. Trapped miners, they thought. I suppose it makes sense. A lot of the digging is through old stonework, so I suppose it's possible that other miners could be trapped somewhere that's got air. Not to last for weeks, though, surely. And why dig in different directions? It's a puzzle, sir. There's no doubt about it. But we'll get to the bottom of it soon enough. Everyone's very keen. Good. But play down the watch side, will you? This is a bunch of concerned citizens trying to find their loved ones after a reported mining disaster, okay? The watchmen are just helping them out. You mean, remember I'm a dwarf, sir? Thank you for that, Carrot. Yes, exactly, said Vimes. And now I'm off to see a legend with a name like a can of polish. As he went out, he noticed the summoning dark symbol. The Pussycat Club drinks menu had been put with some care on a shelf by the window, where it got maximum light. It glowed. Maybe this was because Frosted Hot Lips Rose had been designed to be seen across a crowded bar in poor light, but it seemed to float above the oh-so-funny sticky cocktail names like Just Sex, Pussy Galore, and No Brainer, making them look faded and unreal. Someone, several ones, by the look of it, had lit candles in front of it for when night came. It mustn't be kept in the dark, Vimes had thought. I wish I wasn't. Pointers and Pickles was dusty. Dust was the keynote of the shop. Vimes must have passed it 1,000 times. It was that kind of shop, the kind you walked past. Dust and dead flies filled the little window, which nevertheless offered dim views of large lumps of rock, covered with dust beyond. The bell over the door gave a dusty jangle as Vimes entered the gloomy interior. The noise died away, and there was a definite feeling that this marked the end of the entertainment for today. Then a distant shuffling was born in the heavy silence. It turned out to belong to a very old woman who appeared at first sight to be as dusty as the rocks she presumably sold. Vimes had his doubts even about that. Shops like this one often looked upon the selling of merchandise as, in some way, a betrayal of a sacred trust, as if to underline this, she was carrying a club with a nail in it. When she was close enough for conversation, Vimes said, "I've come here to..." "Do you believe in the healing power of crystals, young man?" snapped the woman, raising the club threateningly. What healing power?" said Vimes. The old woman gave him a cracked smile and dropped the club. "Good," she said. "We like our customers to take their geology seriously. We've got some trollite in this week." "Good, but in fact, it's the only mineral that travels backwards in time, you know." "I'm here to see Mr. Shine," Vimes managed. "Mr. who?" said the old woman, putting a hand to her ear. "Mr. Shine?" said Vimes, confidence already draining out of him. "Never heard of him, dear." "He gave me this," said Vimes, showing her the two pieces of stone egg. "Amethyst geode. Very nice specimen." "I'll give you $7, said the old woman. "Are you or Pickles or Pointer?" said Vimes, as a last resort. "I'm Miss Pickles, dear. Miss Point..." She stopped. Her expression changed, became slightly younger and considerably more alert. "And I'm Miss Pointer, dear," she said. "Don't worry about Pickles. She just runs the body when I've got other things to do. Are you Commander Vimes?" Vimes stared. "Are you telling me you're two people with one body?" "Yes, dear. It's supposed to be an illness, but all I can say is we've always got along well. I've never told her about Mr. Shine. Can't be too careful. Come this way, do. She led the way through the dusty crystals and slabs into the back of the shop, where there was a wide corridor lined with shelves. Crystals of all sizes sparkled down at him. Of course, trolls have always been of interest to geologists. Being made of metamorphical rock, said Miss Pointer, Miss Pickles, conversationally. "You're not a rock hound yourself, Commander." "I've had the occasional stone thrown at me," said Vimes. "I've never bothered to check what kind it was." "Ha! Such a shame we're on loam here," said the woman, as the sound of quiet voices drew near. She opened a door and stood aside. "I rent them the room," she said. "Do go in." Vimes looked at the top few treads of a flight of stairs, heading down. "Oh, goody," he thought. "We're going underground again." But there was warm light coming up, and the voices were louder. The cellar was large and cool. There were tables everywhere, with a couple of people at each one, bent over a checkered board. A games room. The players were dwarfs, trolls, and humans, but what they had in common was concentration. Unconcerned faces glanced toward Vimes, who had paused halfway down the stairs, and then looked back at the games at hand. Vimes continued down to floor level. This had to be important, right? Mr. Shine had wanted to see it. People, men, trolls, dwarfs playing games. Occasionally, a couple of players would look up at each other, share a glance, and shake hands. Then one of them would go off to a new table. "What do you notice, Mr. Vimes?" said a deep voice behind him. Vimes forced himself to turn slowly. The figure sitting in the shadows beside the stairway was shrouded entirely in black. He looked a good head taller than Vimes. They're all young," he ventured, and added, "Mr. Shine?" "Exactly. More youngsters tend to come along in the evenings, too. Do take a seat, sir." "Why have I come to see you, Mr. Shine?" said Vimes, sitting down. "Because you want to find out why you have come to see me," said the dark figure. "Because you're wondering in the dark. Because Mr. Vimes, with his badge and his truncheon, is full of rage. More full than usual. Take care of that rage, Mr. Vimes." Mystic, thought Vimes. "I like to see whom I'm talking to," he said. "What are you?" "You would not see me if I removed this hood," said Mr. Shine. "As for what I am, I'll ask you this. Would it be true to say that Captain Carrot, while very happy to be a watch officer, is the rightful king of Ankh-Morpork?" "I have trouble with the term rightful," said Vimes, "so I understand. It may well be that this is one reason why he hasn't yet chosen to declare himself, said Mr. Shine. But no matter. Well, I am the rightful, excuse me, and indisputable king of the trolls. Really, said Vimes. It wasn't much of a reply, but his options at this point were limited. Yes, and when I say indisputable, I mean what I say, Mr. Vimes. Hidden human kings have to resort to magic swords or legendary feats to reclaim their birthright. I do not. I just have to be. You are aware of the concept of metamorphorical rock? You mean the way trolls look like certain types of rock? Indeed. Schist, mica, shale, and so on. Even brick. Poor young brick. No one knows why this is, and they have expended thousands of words in saying so. Oh, to hell with it. As you would say, you deserve a glimpse. Protect your eyes. Mr. Vimes. A black-robed arm was extended, a black velvet glove removed. Vimes shut his eyes in time, but the inside of his lids blazed red. I am Diamond, said Mr. Shine. The glare faded a little. Vimes risked opening his eyes a bit and made out a hand, every flexing finger sparkling like a prism. The players glanced up, but they'd seen this before. Frost forms quite quickly, said Mr. Shine. When Vimes dared to peek, the hand glittered like the heart of winter. You're hiding out from jewelers, he managed, taken aback. Ha! In fact, this city is indeed a very good place for people who don't wish to be seen, Mr. Vimes. I have friends here, and I have talents. You'd find me quite hard to see if I wished to be unseen. I am also, frankly, intelligent, and intelligent all the time. I don't need the Pork Futures warehouse. I can regulate the temperature of my brain by reflecting all heat. Diamond trolls are very rare, and when we do appear, kingship is our destiny. Vimes waited. Mr. Shine, who was now pulling his glove back on, appeared to have an agenda. The wisest thing was to let him talk until it all made sense. And do you know what happens when we become kings? Said Mr. Shine, now safely shrouded once more. Coom Valley? Vimes suggested. Well done. The trolls unite, and we have the same tired old war, followed by centuries of skirmishing. That is the sad, stupid history of the trolls and the dwarfs. And this time, Ankh-Morpork will be caught up in it. You know that the troll and dwarf population here has grown enormously under Vetinary? Alright, but if you're a king, can't you just make peace? Just like that. It'll need much more than that. The hood of the robe shook sadly. You really know very little about us, Mr. Vimes. You see us down on the plains, shambling around, talking like this. You don't know what about the history chant, or the long dance, or stone music. You see the hunched troll dragging his club. That's what the dwarfs did for us long ago. They turned us, in your minds, into sad, brainless monsters. Don't look at me when you say that, said Vimes. Detritus is one of my best officers. There was silence. Then Mr. Shine said, shall I tell you what I think the dwarfs were looking for, Mr. Vimes? Something of theirs. It is a thing that talks, and they found it. And I think what it had to say directly caused 5 deaths. I believe I know how to find the secret of Coom Valley. In a few weeks, everyone will be able to. But by then, I think it will be too late. You must solve it, too, before the war sweeps up all of us. How do you know all this? Said Vimes. Because I'm magical, said the voice from the hood. Oh, well, if that's the way your Vimes began. Patience, Commander, said Mr. Shine. I just simplified. Except, instead, that I am very smart. I have an analytical mind. I've studied the histories and lore of my hereditary enemy. I have friends who are dwarfs, quite knowledgeable dwarfs, quite powerful dwarfs, who wish for an end to this stupid feud as much as I do. And I have a love of games and puzzles. The Codex was not a terrible challenge. If it's going to help me find the murderers of those dwarfs in the mine, then you should tell me what you know. Why trust what I say? I am a troll. I'm partisan. I might wish to direct your thoughts down the wrong path. Maybe you've already, said Vimes hotly. He knew he was making a fool of himself. It only made him angrier. Good, that's the spirit, said Mr. Shine. Test all that I've told you. Where would we be if Commander Vimes relied on magic, eh? No, the secret of Coombe Valley must be found by observation and questioning and facts. Facts, facts. Possibly I'm helping you find them a little quicker than you might otherwise do. You just have to think about what you know, Commander. And in the meantime, shall we play a little game? Mr. Shime picked up a box by his chair and upended it over the table. This is Thud, Mr. Vimes, he said, as little stone figures bounced over the board. Dwarfs versus trolls. 8 trolls and 32 dwarfs, forever fighting their little battles on a cardboard Coombe Valley. He began to place the pieces, black gloved hands moving with untrollish speed. Vimes pushed back his chair. Nice to meet you, Mr. Shine, but all you are giving me is riddles and sit down, Commander. The quiet voice had a schoolteacher harmonic to it that folded Vimes' legs under him. Good, said Mr. Shine. 8 trolls, 32 dwarfs. Dwarf's oyster. A dwarf is small and fast and can run as many squares as possible in any direction. A troll, because we're stupid and drag our clubs, as everyone knows, can only move 1 square in any direction. There are other types of moving. But what do you see so far? Vimes tried to concentrate. It was hard. This was a game. It wasn't real. Besides, the answer was so obvious that it couldn't be the right one. It looks like the dwarfs must win every time, he ventured. Ah, natural suspicion. I like that. In fact, among the best players, the bias is slightly in favor of the trolls, said Mr. Shine. This is largely because a troll can, in the right circumstances, do a lot of damage. How are your ribs, by the way? All the better for you asking, said Vimes sourly. He'd forgotten them for 20 blessed minutes. Now they ached again. Good. I'm glad Brick has found detritus. He has a good brain if he can be persuaded to stop frying it every half an hour. Back to our game. Advantages to either side do not matter, in fact, because a complete game consists of 2 battles. In one, you must play the dwarfs. And the other, you must play the trolls. As you may expect, dwarfs find it easy to play the dwarf side, which needs a strategy and mode of attack that comes easy to dwarf. Something similar applies to the trolls. But to win, you must play both sides. You must, in fact, be able to think like your ancient enemy. A really skilled player, well, take a look, Commander. Look toward the back of the room, where my friend Phylite is playing against Nils Mousehammer. Vimes turned. What am I looking for? He said. Whatever you see. Well, that troll over there is wearing what looks like a large dwarf helmet. Yes, one of the dwarf players made it for him, and he speaks quite passable dwarfish. He's drinking out of a horn, like the dwarfs do. He had to have one made in metal. Troll beer would melt ordinary horn. Nils can sing quite a lot of the troll history chant. Look at Gabbro over there. Good troll boy, but he knows all there is to know about dwarf battle bread. In fact, I believe that's a boomerang croissant on the table next to him. Purely for ceremonial purposes, of course. Commander? Hmm? Said Vimes, turning his head. What? A slightly built dwarf at one of the tables was watching him with interest, as though he was some kind of fascinating monster. Mr. Shine chuckled. To study the enemy, you have to get under his skin. When you're under his skin, you start to see the world through his eyes. Gabbro is so good at playing from the dwarf viewpoint that his troll game is suffering, and he wants to go to Copperhead to learn from some of the dwarf thubmeisters there. I hope he does. They'll teach him how to play like a troll. None of these lads here were out getting fighting drunk last night. And thus we wear down mountains. Water dripping on a stone, dissolving and removing. Changing the shape of the world. One drop at a time. Water dripping on a stone. Commander, water flowing underground. Bubbling up in unexpected places.
I think you're going to need a bit more of a gush, said Vimes.
I don't think a bunch of people playing games is going to break down a mountain anytime soon. It depends on where the drops fall, said Mr. Shine. In time, they may wash away a valley, at least. You should ask yourself, why was I so keen to get into that mine? Because there had been a murder. And that was the only reason, said the shrouded Mr. Shine. Of course, and everyone knows what gossip's dwarfs are, said Mr. Shine. Well, I am sure you will do your best, Commander. I hope you find the murderer before the dark catches up with them. Mr. Shine, some of my officers have lit candles around that damn symbol. Good thinking, I'd say. So you really believe that it's some kind of a threat? How come you know so much about dwarf signs, anyway? I have studied them. I accepted the fact of their existence. Some of your officers believe. Most dwarfs do. Somewhere in their gnarly little souls. I respect that. You can take a dwarf out of the dark, but you can't take the dark out of a dwarf. Those symbols are very old. They have real power. Who knows what old evil lurks in the deep darkness under the mountains? There is no darkness like it. You can take the Mickey out of a copper too, said Vimes. Ah, Mr. Vimes, you have had a busy day. So much happening, so little time to think. Take time to reflect on all you know, sir. I am a reflecting kind of person. Commander Vimes? The voice came from Miss Pointer / Miss Pickles, halfway up the stairs. There's a big troll asking after you. What a shame, said Mr. Shine. That will be Sergeant Detritus. Not good news, I suspect. If I had to guess, I'd say that the trolls have sent around the Taka-Taka. You must go, Mr. Vimes. I'll be seeing you again. I don't think I'll see you, said Vimes. He stood up and then hesitated. One question, right? Said no funny, and no funny answers, if you don't mind, he said. Tell me why you helped Brick. Why should you care about a slushed out gutter troll? Why should you care about some dead dwarfs? Said Mr. Shine. Because someone has to. Exactly. Goodbye, Mr. Vimes. Vimes hurried up the stairs and followed Miss Pointer / Miss Pickles out of the shop. Detritus was standing among the mineral specimens, looking uncomfortable, like a man in a morgue. What's happening? Said Vimes. Detritus shifted uneasily. Sorry, Mr. Vimes, but I was the only one that knew where... He began. Yes, okay. Is this about the Taka-Taka? How did you know what about that, sir? I don't. What is the Taka-Taka? It's the famous war club of the trolls, said Detritus. Vimes, with the image of the peace club of the trolls downstairs still in his mind, couldn't stop himself. You mean you subscribe and get a different war every month, he said? But that sort of thing was wasted on Detritus. He treated humor as some human aberration that had to be overcome by talking slowly and patiently. No, sir. When der Taka-Taka is sent around the clans, it is summoning to war, he said. Oh, damn. Coombe Valley? Yes, sir. And I'm hearing that der Lo-King and der Upervaldorf is already on their way to Coombe Valley, too. Der street is full of it. Bingle, 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 said a small and very nervous voice. Vimes pulled out the gooseberry and stared at it. At a time like this, well, he said, it's 29 minutes past 5, insert name here, said the imp nervously. So, on foot, at this time of day, you'll need to leave now to be home at 6 o'clock, said the imp. Der Patrician wants to see you, and there's claxes arriving and everything, said Detritus insistently. Vimes continued to stare at the imp, which looked embarrassed. I'm going home, he said, and started walking. Dark clouds were rolling in overhead, heralding another summer storm. They found three dwarfs near der well, sir, said Detritus, lumbering after him. Looks like it was other dwarfs what killed them. Sure enough, the old grags have gone. Captain Carrots put guards on every exit he can find. But they dig, Vimes thought. Who knows where all the tunnels go? And he wants permission to break open their big iron doors in Treacle Street, Detritus went on. They can get at the last dwarf that way. What are the dwarfs saying about it? Said Vimes over his shoulder. The living ones, I mean. A lot of them saw the dead dwarfs brought up, said Detritus. I think most of them would hand him their crowbar. Let's hear it for the mob, Vimes thought. Grab it by its sentimental heart. Besides, The storm is beginning. Why worry about an extra raindrop? Okay, he said. Tell him this. I know Otto will be there with his damn picture box. So when that door is wrenched open, it's going to be dwarfs doing it, okay? A picture full of dwarfs. Right, sir. How is young Brick? Will he swear a statement? Does he understand about that? I reckon he could, sir. In front of the dwarfs? He will if I ask him, sir, said Detritus. That I can promise. Good. And get someone to put out a message on the clocks to every city watch and village constable between here and the mountains. Tell them to look out for a party of dark dwarfs. They've got what they came for, and they're doing a runner. I know it. You want they should try to stop him? The sergeant asked. No, no one should try it. Say they've got weapons, then shoot fire. Just let me know where they're headed. I'll tell them that, sir. And I'm going home, Vimes repeated to himself. Everyone wants something from Vimes, even though I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Hell, I'm probably a spoon. Well, I'm going to be Vimes, and Vimes reads, "Where's my cat, young Sam, at 6 o'clock, with the noises done right." He went home at a brisk walk, using all the little shortcuts, his mind sloshing backwards and forwards like thin soup, his ribs nudging him occasionally to say yes, they were still here and twinging. He arrived at the door just as Wilkins was opening it. "I shall tell her ladyship that you are back, sir," he called out as Vimes hurried up the stairs. "She is mucking out the dragon pins." Young Sam was standing up in his cot, watching the door. Vimes's day went soft and pink. The chair was littered with the favored toys of the hour. A rag ball, a little hoop, a woolly snake with one button eye. Vimes pushed them out onto the rug, sat down, and took off his helmet. Then he took off his damp boots. You didn't need to heat a room after Sam Vimes had taken his boots off. On the wall, the nursery clocks ticked and with every tick and a talk, a little sheep jumped back and forth over a fence.